Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Check out over 64 vehicles in the showroom while enjoying their in-house bistro and kids club. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.
We talked about it last hour and want to bring Derek into the conversation about it. We talked about whether or not Mike Smith would be a good fit to come back as part of a tandem with David Riddick next year. Riddick's a restricted free agent. Smith is an unrestricted free agent. And it is one of the most interesting offseason conversations the Calgary Flames have. It's time for our Flames Roundtable. Second last one of the year. Derek Wills is the radio voice of the Calgary Flames. He's Pinder. I'm Steinberg. Where do you weigh in on that, Wills? Is it the right move? Is having Smith and Riddick as the tandem next year the way to go? Or are there better options out there if you're the Calgary Flames?
Well, I think it's difficult to answer that question right now because we just don't know who's going to be potentially available on the goaltending market. When you look at who is available through free agency, I don't see a guy who would be guaranteed to be a better option than Mike Smith. So the way things stand today, and with the way those two guys work together as a tandem to help the Flames win 50 games and pick up 107 points during the regular season. And if you heard what David Riddick had to say, how glowing he was in talking about Mike Smith at the end of the season and how Smith has taken him under his wing and showed him the ropes and taught him a lot of stuff, both on the ice and off the ice, I think it is a very viable option because Mike Smith, as Brad Treleving said late in the season, or maybe it was in the playoffs, you know, they feel like he's got a lot of tread on his tires for a 37-year-old. So I think it's a viable option, and I'm not sure that anybody, including me, would have said that even in January or February of this season.
The way he finished his season was incredibly encouraging with the caliber of play that Mike Smith provided this club. But the primary concern I have is the fact that he seemingly needed so many reps to get to that spot, and it was clear that when he played 3 out of 5, 4 out of 6, 6 out of 8, that was more likely to produce that kind of play. I don't know that if David Riddick doesn't get nicked up at the end of December that we see that type of play, because he outplayed Smith for all but 1 month, had better numbers than Smith. And so if you're expecting the same results from Smith with a light workload, I don't know that those things match up. And that would echo the sentiments of what Mike said in his exit meetings, what Kevin Woodley, the goaltending whisperer from In Goal Magazine, has told us, is that if you're going to give him the ball and let him run with 60-plus percent, there might be some good net mining there. But you can't expect him to come in once out of 3 or 4 games and be good. That's just not who he's been his whole career. And the problem I see is I think Riddick's the better of the two, and I don't know that Smith is a platoon guy. So if you're committed to Riddick, who is under team control, there's probably better platoon mates available, or at least a tandem where the second guy can give you more as a backup type.
Yeah, and Willsie, that's my primary concern. I wonder, because we played the clip last hour about how Mike Smith said that he did not handle not playing very well and wore it too much. I am somewhat skeptical about whether or not Smith would work well in a tandem. If Smith's the guy getting 60 starts, then sure, I think there's the potential for him to still be a decent goaltender in this league. But right now, finding a number one goalie of the future is most important in my books, and that guy is potentially David Riddick. So I think you have to invest in him for next season, and I think he's the type of guy that you need to be more accountable to at this stage of his career. And I'm not 100% certain that Smith is the perfect platoon mate, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, just to first respond to something Ryan said, David Riddick was no doubt the better of the two goaltenders in the first half of the season, but he wasn't in the second half. Otherwise, he would have started game one. And as he has said, and as Brad Treleving and Bill Peters have both said, the injury that he sustained was just some pain that he had to play through. It wasn't something that prohibited him from playing and wasn't something that really affected his play. So I think you have to take that into consideration. And also take Mike Smith's chest protector to start the season. And it's something that I've talked to Kevin Woodley about as well. Some goaltenders adjusted to the slimmer-fitting chest protector way quicker, way easier than others. Smith went through 3 or 4 different manufacturers, wound up piecing 3 or 4 different manufacturers together sometime near the end of November, and that's when he started to slowly turn the corner and play a little bit better. Now, as far as what you had to say, Pat, as far as mindset of being in a platoon or potentially a number two or a 1B as opposed to a 1 or a 1A, maybe Mike Smith would go into this season with a little bit different mindset. Because last season, we all thought he was the number one goaltender, including him. There were more questions surrounding who would be the Flames' backup after David Rittich struggled to end the regular season a couple of years ago and then struggled in the preseason. People wanted the Flames to trade for a better backup, pick up Curtis McElhinney or somebody off of waivers. So if Smith went in knowing that he was going to be in a competition with David Rittich to be the number one guy, maybe it would be a little bit easier for him to wrap his head around the fact that's where he's at this stage of his career, and maybe it's a tandem that would work. But, you know, if you're the Flames, you don't have to commit to anybody right now, and I do think David Rittich will be one of their goaltenders, but it'll be interesting to see who the other guy is, that's for sure.
Do you think he, like, I want, would he come back if it is with the expressed intent that you have to be part of a tandem? I wonder about that, too.
Yeah, me too, but it really depends on what other options he has.
I don't know that there's many ones out there, like to Derek's point.
That's the
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, if someone says, okay, you're our number one guy, and pays him like that, he's probably going to go there. But if he looks at his options, and basically teams are saying, we'll give you a chance to be the number one guy, and then he looks at the situation here in Calgary, he's comfortable with the Flames, comfortable with the guy he'd be partnered with, and thinks he has a chance to potentially win, might be a pretty good setup for him.
Fascinating. Fascinating to see what the Flames do in net. Mike Smith, unrestricted. David Rittich, restricted, as they've got some goaltending decisions to make for next season. He's Derek Wills. He's Ryan Pinder. My name is Pat Stymie. This is our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. Now that the Carolina Hurricanes have moved on to round number two, we talked about this a couple of hours ago. I think it's a good time to revisit last June's trade with the Carolina Hurricanes because, you know, you go back to the first half of the season, there was plenty of sentiment out there that not only was this a good trade for the Flames, but it was a laughable, runaway, lopsided deal for Calgary, and the Hurricanes clearly lost it. Well, now here we are, fast forward to late April. The Hurricanes are moving on to round number two. Dougie Hamilton was a big reason why they were able to get past the Washington Capitals, and the Flames go out in five games to Colorado. Derek, is it time to revisit that a little bit? I don't think anybody believes this is a loss for the Flames, but maybe it's a whole lot more even of a trade than people were willing to give it credit for in October, November, and December.
I mean, I think really we're going to have to wait to see what happens with Michael Ferland, if they're able to re-sign him or get something for him. I think it could just turn out to be a really good hockey trade that helps both teams. Right now, I still think the Flames got the better of the deal because I don't think Adam Fox is going to sign with the Hurricanes, and we'll have to wait and see if they can get some sort of compensation for his trading rights. But it's a trade that looks a lot more balanced now than it did even 2 or 3 months ago when it was not only a home run for the Flames, but a grand slam home run for the Flames with the season that Elias Lindholm had, and to a lesser extent, Noah Hanifin, who was a really good fit on the second pairing. But I mean, Elias Lindholm, not even he thought he would have this type of season. 10 more goals than he's had in any other season, 33 more points than he's had in any other season. So it was a trade that certainly, I think, favored the Flames for most of the season, but that gap is definitely closed. And it would be probably even tighter for me, guys, if Michael Ferland had been able to stay healthy and help the Hurricanes a bit more in the first round.
You know, I think it was a little silly to try to assess a winner and a loser 3 months in. I mean, Elias Lindholm was shooting close to 30%. Dougie Hamilton was shooting under 5%. There's some really good players involved here. And I think there's also a change of scenery factor. It was clear negotiations with Hanifin and Lindholm weren't going well with Carolina under a new regime, a new owner. And it was clear, I think, on both sides of the Flames and Dougie Hamilton that maybe another spot would be better for both parties involved. So I think this is absolutely a deal that if you give both teams the chance to redo today, they both would do it. And I think, you know, while 3 months in it looked lopsided, it certainly doesn't look as lopsided today. And I still think you give Carolina the time machine, they'll take Dougie Hamilton in a round two date against the Islanders.
Well, and I think that's maybe the best way that I'd put it, gents, is that I think that both teams would go ahead and make that deal again. I don't think either team regrets it right now because by no means has it been a bad fit for the Flames. While Lindholm tailed off in the second half of the season, much like that entire top line did, and you know Hanifin had his ups and downs throughout, they both were good fits in their first year with Calgary. And on the other side, Dougie Hamilton did not get off to a great start with the Hurricanes, but he finished with 39 points, 20 of those points were scored in the final 32 games of the season. He had 19 in his first 50. He had 20 in his final 32. And he became a whole lot more comfortable and got into a little bit of a groove there in Carolina. So, yeah, I think, Derek, that both teams would probably pull the trigger on that deal. And I think both teams are feeling pretty happy about that acquisition now that, you know, we're through one round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think the Flames would have liked if Elias Lindholm could have played the way after the 9-day break that he did the way before it, or the way he played before it. And I do think he was probably the best member of the Flames' first line in their 5-game series against the Avalanche, but the offense really did dry up for him in the stretch run and certainly in the playoffs. But still a very good two-way player who's good defensively, even when he's not contributing offensively. And, you know, people forget that Hanifin's just 22 years old, and the guy has got almost 400 games under his belt in the NHL. This is a league that gets faster and faster every season, and his greatest asset is his ability to skate. So I think that he's going to become a more valuable player with the more experience he gets, with the better he becomes defensively. And I still think there's a lot of room for him to grow offensively and become more of a point producer for this team. Maybe a guy who sees some power play time moving forward.
He's the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills. He's Ryan Pinder. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is our second last Daily Calgary Flames roundtable of the season. Just a final thought today as the second round gets going. Gents, give me one second round series that is must see TV for you. One second round series that you won't be able to take your eyes off of.
Well, for me, it's got to be the Avalanche versus the Sharks for a number of different reasons. Number one, the Avalanche beat the Flames out in the first round. Number two, I thought there was a pretty good chance the Flames would play the Sharks in the second round. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And you've also got two teams who play a really exciting brand of hockey. And for me, the other interesting thing going into the series is the Avalanche are going to be well-rested and are going to be pretty close to 100%. As I'm guessing that Sam Girard's going to be available to play at some point in time in the series. And even Vladislav Kamenev looks like he could return at some point in time and give him a little bit more depth back there. And then you've got a Sharks team that's beat up after a top 7-game series against the Golden Knights. Will they, won't they have their leading goal scorer, their captain Joe Pavelski, available for the series? And what kind of goaltending are you going to get for Martin Jones? Is he going to be the guy we saw for about half of that first-round series, the bad, the Jekyll version of Martin Jones, or will he be the good Hyde version? We'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But I think that's going to be a fun series to watch, and I'm fascinated to see if rest or rust will prevail in game one.
I'm going to go with Columbus and Boston, sweeping the best regular season team we've seen in maybe a decade or more. Has Columbus not only feeling good in that fan base with their first ever series victory, but well-rested. It kind of has that rest-rust that Derek alludes to, and it also has Boston, who are now the favorites to win the Cup after being the only, you know, top five team of the three from the Atlantic Division that is left in the tournament. I also think both teams can play nasty. I think they're both clubs that aren't afraid to shy away from physical play, and Bobrovsky and Panarin and that plot line, Tortorella, like there's a lot of good chaos in this series, which we love.
Yep. I'll break the tie. To me, if I could only watch one series, it's got to be Colorado San Jose. The way that Colorado plays and the firepower that they have and what they did to the Flames in round number one. And then San Jose is a hell of a hockey team, and they got sewered by some goaltending at different points in that series. And Vegas is a good team too, but Colorado San Jose is going to be an outstanding series. I cannot wait for it. We've got game one for you tomorrow right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. That one is the one that I will have my eyes peeled on from start to, or peeled to rather, from start to finish. I think it's going to be the best series of the second round, and I think it's going to be pretty darn close despite the gap in points between the two teams. So looking forward to it. Wilsey, we will wrap up our Daily Calgary Flames roundtable with you tomorrow. The final one for the 2018-19 season, but enjoy the rest of your Thursday, pal. Thank you.
Will do. Looking forward to tomorrow, and Bo says hi.
Hi, Bo.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Check out over 64 vehicles in the showroom while enjoying their in-house bistro and kids club. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.